ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And this week on WEBR, I have officially moved from the 10 o'clock hour to the 9 o'clock hour. I've been starting early for months and months, but I'm now officially 9 to 10 p.m. So this is going to be different, getting the handoff from the Vandalay House Party Boys. Anyway, today is September 8th, 2008, and it was on this date in 1999 that Attorney General Janet Reno named former U.S. Senator John Danforth, used to be my senator in Missouri when I lived there, to head an independent investigation into the Branch Davidian fire in 1993 that consumed the compound down there in Waco, Texas. Of course, the Republicans were fond of saying that she was the worst attorney general that they could ever remember. But I haven't heard any Republicans say that lately. And this is the day that the novel The Old Man and the Sea was published. That would be Ernest Hemingway, of course, a book we all had to read in high school, and most of us liked it. One of the things we liked about it is it's short. It's a short book. But can you remember, can you think, what year might that have been published? Ernest Hemingway, think, what year? It was in 2 years of my birth, as a hint. I may never have told you my birthday, but I know I've told you how old I am. 1952, Old Man and the Sea was published. So we have a variety of interesting news this week and a variety of, it's hard to know where to start. So on the way in, I'm listening to right-wing talk shows Austin Hill is on WMAL from 8 to 10. And I don't know him really well, but as I'm tuning in, he is getting all bent out of shape over the flags that the McCain campaign used today at their campaign event. And the flags that they used were 12,000 flags that they supposedly got from the Invesco Field episode speech that Obama gave and the whole extravaganza there, and they're claiming that the Obama campaign put these in the trash, threw them out, disrespecting the flag, and so they rescued 12,000 flags and brought them down there. So he's going on and on about this in the 10 minutes, 15 minutes it's taken me to drive in, and he takes some callers who are disgusted with the Democrats and one who tries to defend Obama and says, you can't really blame Obama for flags that the campaign forgot to take care of properly. And Austin Hill actually had the gall to sit there and say that values matter, as though somehow if a staffer did, and by the way, I'm going to get to the bottom and the Democrats' response to this in a moment, if a staffer, you know, a couple of days after the Invesco Field thing, did improperly dispose of flags, and that's being disputed by the Democrats, by the way. But even if he did, how is that a reflection on Obama? Well, basically, Austin Hill wants you to believe that it's just an indication that the Democrats still have trouble with the patriotism issue. I'm sorry, I'm here to say this is crap. I am so tired of hearing this, that if I care to criticize my government, I'm somehow being unpatriotic. Republicans are famous for using the phrase, the blame America first crowd, for people who want the country to reflect on itself and get better at its own behavior. He went on to say something about how the Democrats, you know, they love the troops, they just hate this president and this commander-in-chief, and they hate the troops who are the actions of the troops when they're baby killers or something. And I'm thinking, where is this coming from? Who's accusing them of that? Certainly not Obama or the Obama campaign or any reputable Democrat. So, of course, I realize this is right-wing talk radio, but one of the reasons why we've got this embedded base of 30% on the far right that are, you know, that no facts cannot permeate their barrier, is that they are fed a constant diet by the holy BS crowd, H-O-L-I, Hannity, O'Reilly, Limbaugh, Ingram, and the BS is Bortz and Savage, six of the top 10 right-wing talk show hosts in the country. And the steady diet is this constant nonsense and focus on the trivial. So they're back to the flag issue, trying to convince America, or at least their listeners, that Barack Obama is somehow suspect on patriotism. I am just so sick of that nonsense, that somehow, because we don't hide behind the flag, that somehow we're not patriotic. It just disgusts me the way they do it, and the way they think that they're making some headway. They're so self-righteous about this stuff. Anyway, to get back to the part Austin Hill didn't cover, this was in the news today, these 12,000 flags, and there's two facts you should know about it. The one is that the Democrats put out a statement, the Obama campaign put out a statement that said those flags were our property. They were neatly rolled up in the same black plastic bags that they came in, and that we brought them to the Invesco Field in, and we distributed them to the crowd in. They were neatly rolled up afterwards. We intend to use those at other rallies and around the country. We had no intention of throwing them out, and whoever took them basically absconded with our property. Now, Austin Hill didn't get to that part of the explanation in the 10 minutes that I heard him talking. But so that's the Democrats' position. The Republicans' answer is, we found them near the trash. Or not Republicans. First they claimed Boy Scouts found them, then they said forget how they described the person who supposedly found them and got them to the McCain campaign. Anyway, there's like 84 bags, trash bags they called them, of these flags. It's not like they found a few tiny flags. And these were pretty big flags, not these little 3 to 6 inch flags. They were good-sized flags that the Democrats were waving on the floor. And the only picture I saw of these on the web today showed them all neatly rolled up in bags and stacked there. Clearly not trash, although they were in black plastic bags, so the Republicans inferred the Democrats were throwing them out. Okay. Now, the only other fact that's been put out there so far is that supposedly they were found a week after the Democratic convention. So it is true that if the Obama campaign thought they were going to come back and get those, they left them there an awful long time. So it's possible somebody forgot to pick them up. But the idea that this means something about patriotism, don't get me started. Well, so there's been a lot of big news since my last show. I don't do shows on holidays because the studios at WEBR Radio here are closed on Monday nights. So I had no show last week, and so we're catching up on both the Democratic convention and the Republican convention. And the big news, well, the biggest news is that the U.S. government is taking control of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'm not really going to cover that this week, in part because I've got so much to talk about when it comes to the campaign and the Republican and Democratic convention. And also, for a lot of you, it'd be pretty boring to talk about the implications to our financial system of that. But I do want to talk about the Democratic-Republican race and the latest news and the Democratic and the Republican conventions. So the newest news is the McCain bounce. McCain is clearly getting a bounce out of his convention. Obama got his bounce. It ended up being about 4 points. He was up 2 points before his convention, and Monday and Tuesday after his convention, meaning a week ago, he was up approximately 6 points. And that's usually where the bounce shows up. It peaks by about the Tuesday after the convention. That's the expectation, is that McCain's bounce will peak tomorrow. Right now, it's looking like McCain is up about 2.3 points I don't know, something like 46% to 44%, okay? And depends on the poll you read. But the average is 2.3% across the four or five most reputable polls that are being done frequently these days. And that's a legitimate bounce. It looks like McCain has taken a slight lead. I have to tell you, and anybody who's rooting for Obama as I am and supporting Obama as I am, I wouldn't worry. I don't think this is a permanent bounce. I think this is a temporary bounce. And we'll get to the bottom of why it seems that way before we finish here. But let's back up from the bounce to go back 1 week ago, a week ago Friday, when John McCain picked Sarah Palin to be his running mate. So the Palin pick is probably the biggest piece of news that's going here. And the Palin pick is several things. It's McCain throwing the long bomb, right, the Hail Mary pass. That is, he needed to do something to shake up the race. All the indications were that it's a Democratic year and that he's got several anchors holding him down. He needed to do something to shake up the race. So he did two things. The first is he picked Sarah Palin, a woman, and the Alaska governor for his ticket. He also, in picking her, of course, he got an ultra-conservative, someone who the base is ecstatic about. And he also is redefining his campaign as that he and she are both mavericks and that he will bring reform to Washington. And so he's backing away from the rest of his campaign. His campaign up until then had been you need a steady hand like McCain to fight the global war on terror and to lead America in these uncertain times. And he also made the claim that Obama was unqualified and didn't have enough experience to be commander-in-chief. And he must have realized in selecting Sarah Palin that he was giving up that argument because Obama is clearly more qualified than Sarah Palin. Now, what's interesting is that during the Republican convention, the rhetoric that the Republicans were putting out, their talking points were that, no, no, you're wrong that Sarah Palin's not qualified. Not only is she qualified, she's more qualified than Obama. And they base that on the fact that she has executive experience. That is, she was mayor of the town of Wasilla, Washington, for 6 years, 2 3-year terms. And that's a town of a little under 10,000 people, depending on what census and who you listen to that's counting the people. There's about four or five numbers out on that. And she's been governor of Alaska for 21 months now, going on 2 years. Whereas Obama was a state senator for, I think, 8 years. No, maybe he was 6 years also. And now Obama has been the a senator for, it's 3.5 years going on. It'll be 4 years by the time he takes the oath of office next January. So that's their claim, is that executive experience trumps everything else. And, of course, she's a hockey mom. She's a mother of five. And balances work and family well by all accounts, et cetera, et cetera. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but I want to share something with you. I usually play parody songs or promos or things like that at a break, but I have a special treat for you tonight. This is a song called The River, and it's not The River by Bruce Springsteen. This is a new song from the new album by David Byrne and Brian Eno.
Standing on the stage, I'm working in a restaurant. I make a decent wage, and I will sing into the microphone. Shops, how far of me.
Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Pin Show,
the smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on the Andy Pin Show, and today is September 8th, 2008. And it was on this date, in 1892, that the Pledge of Allegiance was born, at least an early version of it. 1892, hard to believe, eh? And a bus in Washington, D.C. was equipped with a two-way radio for the first time in service. In what year? Think about that, folks. What year might there be a two-way radio in a bus, a city bus? 1945. That's surprising to me. I guess maybe they waited for the technology after the war, but I mean, the wireless was invented by Marconi in 1895, I think it was, or four, and it was being used in ships within a couple of years because it was so necessary in ships. You would have thought it made its way into buses earlier, but maybe they just didn't feel the need to have them in buses before then, or the technology just wasn't mass-produced and affordable until after World War II, but that's how it is. And let's see. Well, that's really it. Today's the birthday of Antonin Dvorak, composer of one of my favorite symphonies, Dvorak's Ninth. It's also, he was born in 1841, and it's also the birthday, or it was the birthday, of Claude Pepper, longtime U.S. representative and member of AARP. I think he served in the House of Representatives till he was 88 years old or 90. He was born in 1900, so were he alive, he would be 108. But, of course, he's not, so he's also not 108. Anyway, let's move on and talk a little bit about the Palin pick, a little bit more about the Palin pick. And, in fact, let's go right to John McCain on this. You know, I hate to see this happen to politicians. For example, here's George W. Bush a few weeks ago, I guess we'd say. What was the date on this?
Fundamental differences with China. Yeah. But given China's growing strength and America's own problems, realistically, how much leverage and influence does the U.S. have here?
First of all, I don't see America having problems.
Okay, great. That's George Bush being interviewed by Bob Costas, that notoriously tough interviewer at the Olympics. And when he says, you know, given America's problems, I don't see America having problems. I mean, that is a politician. You know, putting the best spin on things is one way to see it. Another way to see it is, that's a politician in denial. So, with that in mind, John McCain was asked, you know, you're supposed to pick for VP the person who's most qualified to be president. Now, presidents are always having to defend their Supreme Court choices and say, yes, I've picked the most qualified person. I think when Bush said that about John Roberts, it was actually the truth. There may have been no one more qualified than John Roberts for the Supreme Court. Although he's too conservative for me, he's got the credentials. But when his father picked Clarence Thomas and said he was the most qualified person he could find, well, that's just nonsense, of course. And people, that's why we get used to politicians lying. Well, here is John McCain telling a whopper. What can I say?
John McCain has come to St. Paul to take charge of the convention that will formally nominate him for the presidency of the United States tonight. McCain landed here just before lunchtime, greeted at the airport by his wife and seven children, and by his running mate, Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska, along with her husband and children. This afternoon, I sat down with the Arizona senator, and we talked about the swirl of controversy that surrounds her, controversy regarding her experience or lack of same.
Senator, since I've been following politics, every single presidential nominee has said that the first quality they look for mm-hmm. in a vice presidential pick mm-hmm. is the capability and the readiness to take mm-hmm. over as president. Mm-hmm. Can you look mm-hmm. the country straight uh-huh. in the eye and say Sarah Palin has the qualities and has enough experience to be commander-in-chief?
Oh, absolutely. When I think people compare her experience and background and accomplishments, I mean, ethics and lobbying reform in a state that was beset by the influence of special interests, cutting taxes, giving the citizens back money. I mean, she's got an incredible resume, including a beautiful family and a wonderful, loving, caring family. So I will think that over time, people will compare her accomplishments with that of Senator Obama, and his are very meager.
But he's been vetted. 19 months he's been debating in front of this country.
That's an excellent point.
18 times in the primaries, people voted for him. With her, we have your say-so.
Well, the people of Alaska have vetted her. That's why she has an 80% approval rating. And again, I don't like to make these comparisons. She's had positions of responsibility and authority. In all due respect to my friend Joe Biden, he's never been executive of anything. Nor has Senator Obama. I've commanded the largest squadron in the United States Navy with huge responsibilities. It was a leadership job, but it was also a huge responsibility.
Can you honestly say you feel confident having someone who hadn't traveled outside the United States until last year, dealing with an insurgent Russia, with an Iran with nuclear ambitions, with an unstable Pakistan, not to mention the war on terror?
Sure. And one of the key elements of America's national security requirements are energy. She understands the energy issues better than anybody I know in Washington, D.C.
Okay, I got to stop there. I can't take it anymore. So we're supposed to believe that Sarah Palin is more experienced than Barack Obama, is better qualified than Barack Obama to be president, and that she understands energy better than anyone John McCain knows in Washington, D.C. I know people in Washington, D.C. that understand energy better than her. The reason I say that is she's been governor for a little less than 2 years. Now, it's true they deal with energy up there, but something you got to remember about Alaska, where every other state in the union has budget troubles, that is, they have trouble raising the money. They are always running the risk of running deficits because expenses go up, costs go up. Sometimes your tax base goes down. Alaska is flush with revenue because they get royalties from the oil that's taken out of the ground up there. So one of the reasons Sarah Palin is a popular governor is that she renegotiated the agreement with the oil companies up there and increased the amount of taxes that the oil companies pay. So she's a Republican who's raised taxes on the oil companies, and then she turned around and gave cash rebate checks to the citizens of Alaska. She doubled the rebate checks they get. I think this is right. They were getting about $600 a year per person. If you got a family of five kids like she does, they get seven checks. They were getting $600 a person before. Now they get seven checks of $1,200. She doubled it from $600 to $1,200. So she's popular with the people. But she raised taxes on the oil companies, and she did oversee this agreement to build a pipeline, and she did a better job than her predecessor was in terms of not being taken to the cleaners by the oil companies. But to say she understands energy, I mean, oil and gas are only one piece of the energy puzzle, and that's really the problem with McCain's position on energy, is he's going around the country saying, drill here, drill now. Well, that is fine, Wetterwick, but the problem with it is that it's incomplete, Wetterwick. It doesn't really tell us what we need to know. And that is, I mean, if I was Barack Obama, I would announce an Apollo-like, you know, campaign, in the same way that John Kennedy said, by 1970, within 10 years, we will land a man on the moon, Barack Obama should say that within 10 years, we will revamp how we look at energy in this country. And then they should, you know, McCain, I think he offered, his plan is to offer a $300 million prize for the person that develops the battery that can power a car adequately, whatever that criterion is. Wrong strategy. $300 million for one prize? You'd only get big companies going after that. No. What you want are all 50 states engaging. You want 100 universities engaging. You want hundreds of companies engaging. You want thousands of efforts to uncover new approaches, new technologies. Somebody will invent a better light bulb. Somebody will invent a better battery. Somebody will figure out a way to make cars run better on natural gas. All of those things. And so the government, there's always a role for government to stimulate these things. Some people, some companies are not going to take a chance on the basic research it takes when they're looking at the profits they can generate in the next several years. They're not going to do basic research that's going to take 10 years to come to fruition. So that's why government has a role, you know, and Republicans don't think this way. That's why it's more important right now to have Democrats in office. But if you look at a lot of the basic inventions that have come along, whether it was the internet, which the government funded and started along with the universities, or and which led to the complete, what I want to say, the information age economy in the 90s and that we're still benefiting from today, and or whether it's the medical research that comes out of government funding, or it's the inventions that come out of the money we've thrown at Star Wars, or inventions and new technology that have come out of our military spending or our spending at, on the space program. Government spends a lot of money on basic research that turns into useful products. And there's just no getting around that, and yet it's not something that Republicans are very comfortable with. Anyway, when we come back, we'll probably talk a little bit more about Sarah Palin, but then we'll move on to the aftermath of the Republican and the Democratic conventions.